Oyez, 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 United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Alan G. Lance presiding. All those who have business before the court draw nigh and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon. I'm Judge Lance. To my right is Judge Sholin. To my left is Judge Bartley. This is the appointed time, date, and location for the hearing in the matter of Hezekiah Green, Jr. v. Robert A. McDonald, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 16-0740. Will counsel please each identify yourself for the record?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Jenna Zellmer of the law firm of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick. With me at counsel table is Zachary Stoltz, also of the firm.
Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. It's Emily Purcell on behalf of the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. With me at counsel table is James Cowden, Deputy Chief Counsel.
Welcome to you. Appellant wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes.
You may begin when ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This case is about meaningful access to the appellant's electronic claims file. The plain language of Sections 1.600 through 1.603 specifically contemplate remote access to a claimant's electronic files by attorneys of record at this Court. This is consistent with VA's position in the Federal Register notice, which the Court highlighted last week. That notice speaks to access to automated claims files and redefines those files to include VBMS. The paragraph that the court highlighted provides that attorneys of record are bound by the same security guidelines as VA employees. Those VA employees are not required to be accredited to represent clients before the VA. Page 12 of the Federal Register notice specifically contemplates remote online access, and it provides that access is available to attorneys of record with a provided written consent or a power of attorney. That distinction mirrors the language in Section 1.601, which provides for two categories of applicants: one, accredited representatives, and two, attorneys of record at this court. That notice also provides that VBMS data is available to attorneys who are approved in accordance with VA's guidelines, or VA's regulations, excuse me. Those regulations are sections 1.600 through 1.603. This is also consistent with the court's rule of practice 10D. The Federal Circuit in Checo recognized that this court has broad discretion to interpret and apply its own rules. And this case in this court recently in Robinson recognized that same power. Rule 10D provides appellant's counsel the right to the original material, any original material relevant to the appeal.
To that end, has VA actually denied you the right to access the VBMS or the Veterans Claims file?
Your Honor, the Secretary has offered the appellant's counsel the opportunity to go to the regional office to view the VBMS. However, the plain language of the regulation contemplates access from a location other than the regional office.
What if we don't agree with that interpretation? Would the limitations that VA has put in place be reasonable then?
Your Honor, we would submit that they would not be reasonable. Requiring appellant's counsel to go to the regional office does not constitute meaningful access in accordance with the regulation and in accordance with the court's rule of practice.
This is the same access that's been provided for the last, you know, two decades of this court's existence.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the Secretary in Robinson took the position that VBMS is now the official claims file. In order to effectively represent clients before this court, appellant's counsel needs to have access to the claimant's file.
You are still being given access to the claimant's file. You just have to drive across Providence to the regional office.
Yes, Your Honor, and if the court ordered me to do so, I would be happy to do so, but I would submit that that is not in accordance with the plain language of Section 1.601, and it isn't meaningful access. you know, the regional office is only open certain hours of certain days. Attorneys of record work during days that the regional office is closed. We work on Columbus Day sometimes. We work on other federal holidays. We also work longer hours than the regional office is open. It's not meaningful access to require an attorney of record to have to call an RO, make an appointment to view a record, work around the RO's schedule, especially I myself have appearances in over 100 cases before this court.
Well, again, I'm sort of getting at what has changed, though. This has been what was the status quo, so what would make this now per se unreasonable when last year, 5 years ago, it was reasonable?
The difference, Your Honor, is that VBMS is now the official claims file. The only access that we have to VBMS now is through the RO.
The only access you had to the claims file was before was to the RO.
Yes, Your Honor. However, now that the Secretary has taken the position that VBMS is the official claims file, the paper copy has started to become destroyed. I'm not sure exactly, but after the Robinson case, we felt that it was necessary in order to effectively represent our clients and to make sure that we have the full claims file access to VBMS.
I'm sorry, please go ahead.
Did this court accept in Robinson the Secretary's argument that as to what was the claims file?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe on the slip opinion, page 2, this court summarized the Secretary's position that the databases now constitute the original claims file. However, in ordering the Secretary to provide whatever paper claims file is still available, I don't believe the court fully accepted the Secretary's position.
But, and yet you're predicating your argument on what was could be seen as having been rejected.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, the board specifically referred to VBMS, and that's why we brought this motion. The board specifically referred to VBMS and found that whatever VBMS records were entered were in error. In order to fully ascertain whether or not that is true, in order to fully represent our client to the best of our ability, we need to see the VBMS records and confirm whether or not the board's finding was accurate.
Are other members of your firm, such as your counsel, accredited to practice before VA?
They are, Your Honor.
Would they be able to access the file for Mr. Green as they are attorneys of record in Mr. Green's case before this court?
Under the plain language of the regulation, they should be able to. Yes, Your Honor.
And so exactly how are you harmed?
Your Honor, I myself am not accredited. And the plain language of the regulation specifies two separate individuals, attorneys of record and accredited representatives. In this case, the disabled American veterans are the accredited representative of Mr. Green. And so as it stands today, we do not have VBMS access to Mr. Green's file.
And you don't want to be an accredited VA representative?
No, Your Honor, I only practice in this court, and this court does not require licensed attorneys of record to also be accredited at VA. This court is a separate entity than VA, requiring attorneys of record to also be accredited. While the Secretary may want that to happen, that is within this court's power, and this court has not required attorneys of record to also be accredited to practice at the VA.
Go ahead.
Just one small follow-up question. So, is part of your reservation about applying to be accredited that you feel like you couldn't in good faith fill out the form because you really don't want to perform representation at the VA or board level?
Your Honor, I'm not sure what the process for becoming accredited at the VA level is. I myself am only licensed to practice here. I prefer to practice here. And so if there is something on the form that requires me to state that I would like to practice at the VA, You know, that might change in the future, but as it stands right now, I'm not accredited and I don't wish to become accredited.
Prior to VBMS, was remote access available for paper claims files?
I'm not sure if I understand your question. Are you asking if the secretary would mail the paper claims file or if we could go to the regional office?
I'm asking you if remote access was available in some form or fashion for paper claims file.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the secretary's position is that the appellant's counsel has always been able to go to the regional office to view a paper claims file. And it's my understanding that prior to VBMS, the secretary would mail a paper copy to the appellant's counsel. So yes, remote access was available prior to VBMS.
An important question, at least in my mind, is whose records are these? Who owns these records?
That's a good question, Your Honor.
It's a great question.
The records contain the information, Mr. Green's information. However, they're government records. They remain in the secretary's possession. So I guess they would be secretary's records.
Let me give you a hypothetical. If those records were to be subpoenaed by a court of competent jurisdiction, a motion to quash the subpoena could be brought by whom, do you suppose?
By the secretary, Your Honor.
And you don't think your client would have the right to intervene and attempt to quash that subpoena?
I think he would have a right to intervene because it is his personal information. The Federal Register notice that the court brought to the party's attention last week actually specifies a number of different scenarios in which the secretary may disclose a claimant's information. And I believe one of those scenarios would be something similar to what you've proposed.
That gives the secretary authority to do it, but what incentive would the secretary have to quash a subpoena that requested the records of Al Lance in the possession of the secretary?
I suppose that the secretary's motive would have something to do with the Privacy Act, Your Honor. I know that the secretary believes, you know, it's his duty to protect the clients, or our clients, the claimants, information. And so if the secretary believed that there wasn't, you know, a valid reason to have that information subpoenaed, I suppose he could file a motion to quash.
Well, I suppose he could too, but if he didn't, then the records would be made available pursuant to the subpoena process.
Yes, Your Honor.
If I were the person who was being inquired about, and let's assume that it dealt with a former spouse, a criminal investigation, IRS tax related things, shouldn't I have standing to step in and say there's a legitimate reason that these records should not be released pursuant to the subpoena?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So are they my records or the secretary's records?
They're your records.
The secretary laid out the multiple steps that would be required for them to grant remote access to VBMS, and part of it included getting a PIV card or PIV card. Do you have any position with regard to the requirements to get a PIV card?
No, Your Honor. As I understand it, the secretary, you know, sets out security guidelines in order to provide accredited representatives remote access. I'm willing to satisfy any of those security requirements. I do think that requiring accreditation is the issue here. The plain language of the regulation specifies two separate applicants, accredited reps and court attorneys of record at this court. And so I'm willing to comply with the secretary's privacy concerns, but the issue is that the secretary already has a system in which he can provide remote access to representatives. The only difference here is that the secretary is requiring court attorneys to go to the regional office to obtain the same information that representatives at the VA can retain remotely.
But they have gone through the accreditation process.
Yes, Your Honor.
For us to decide this issue, who has the burden of proof? Does VA have to show that the policy is unreasonable, or do you need to show us, I mean, show that the policy is reasonable, or do you need to show us that it's unreasonable?
Your Honor, I think the plain language of the regulation controls here, and in that case, the plain language specifies that court attorneys are allowed remote access to electronic claims files. I think if the Secretary wishes to deny access based on the plain language of the regulation, it would be his burden of proof. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, we'd ask this Court to direct the Secretary to provide meaningful electronic access to the appellant's claims file in accordance with his own regulations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. There is no legal right to remote access to BBMS.
Excuse me. May I interrupt for just a moment? Could you please get the microphone just a little closer? Thank you. My wife didn't make me put in my hearing aids this morning.
Is that better?
That's better. Thank you.
Your Honors, there is no legal right to remote access to BBMS. Rather, whether and in what manner VA grants the privilege and convenience of remote access to BBMS is entirely discretionary and a matter over which this Court does not have jurisdiction. Appellant's request for remote access to BBMS without first obtaining VA accreditation should be denied for the following four reasons. First, Appellant's counsel has access at the local regional office, and therefore VA is in compliance with Rule 10D. Second, remote access to BBMS triggers additional information and security safeguards, which are mandated by other federal law and over which this Court does not have jurisdiction. Third, VA's determination that accreditation is part of the process needed for access to BBMS, remote access to BBMS, is an internal management decision committed to VA's discretion and which is not reviewable. Finally, the regulations on which appellant attempts to rely do not create a right to remote access to BBMS.
Counselor, let me ask you a couple of questions then.
Sure.
Your point number one is that all you have to do is offer the ability to go to an RO, and that suffices for due process purposes, right?
Yes.
All right. If I lived in Juneau, Alaska, and I wanted to look at my records, do you have any idea how far it would take, or how far it would be for me to go look at my records?
I think that in Alaska, it might be pretty far. However, there's any type of VA facility would be available, not simply a regional office. And I think in those circumstances, the Secretary would endeavor to make a special circumstance if there was a undue hardship.
Well, the answer to that question is 847 miles, which is a little different than Providence, Rhode Island, I would guess. If you lived in Bonners Ferry, Idaho, the closest RO is Fort Harrison, Montana, and that's a distance of 323 miles, and there's no regular air service scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lived in Copper Harbor, Michigan, the closest RO is Milwaukee, and that's 377 miles away. So I'm having a little difficulty with your representation that merely providing authority and permission to go to your RO satisfies a practical concern that I have, which is distance may have something to do with this.
Well, first, this is the same access that VA is always required, which is to go to the local regional office to review the claims file. But beyond that, as any VA facility would be able to accommodate this. So I'm not. There may be a health administration facility that would be available and closer. We would make arrangements for review to happen in that situation. Finally, appellant's counsel would always have the option of getting accredited in order to get the access, the privilege of the remote access to BBMS.
And but let's say, Ms. Zellmer, this is the first case she's representing a veteran at this court. You have to produce the record, I think, within 60 days, the notice of docketing to send them the RBA, and then they have 14 days to raise a record dispute. Would it be possible for her to become accredited and get a PIV card during that period of time?
I'm not positive how long it takes to get a PIV card. I think that it's about a month or so. So maybe.
Well, according to your website, it takes, I think, between 60 and 90 days to become accredited.
Accredited?
That's what your website says. So. Does that make that unreasonable then for an appellant to have to jump through a hoop that prevents them from meeting the court's deadlines?
When weighed against the fact that VA is obligated to protect the privacy and security of information and its internal information system, BBMS, and the federal laws that require it to do so, I think that it is not unreasonable.
The process to get an accreditation means she has to submit her proof of being a member of a bar in good standing, and she has to assert that she's in good character, which VA will assume, absent other evidence.
Yes.
She could have been accepted to her bar 30 years ago, even if we assume there was some sort of background check then. The PIV card process does include a background check, all these other things. That, I believe, adds actually security. What does the accreditation process add to the protection of the federal records and access to VA's internal systems?
Accreditation, well, like you said, the PIV card is one part of the process, and that provides the logistical access or the logical access to VA's information system. But beyond that, VA has made a management decision that accreditation is required before they will give a PIV card to a representative. And this is because it is currently the only way that we can meet the obligation of protecting privacy of a veteran's record and other veterans' records within the confines of the technological limitations that we face with the BBMS system.
So now, is that because you have to assign a POA code?
That's part of it, but BBMS the way the system is built is it currently is not set up to accommodate an unaccredited representative. So to do that would require some revision to the program, and there are some downstream implications that come along with that. But again, this is still in compliance with Rule 10D and VA's reasonable regulations, which simply require an inspection and the right to copy the record. They do not allow for remote access. There's no right anywhere to remote access.
Well, is that because VA potentially has buried its head in the sand by not updating its regulations since BDN? They announce new systems in the Federal Register and say they will be access will be guided by regulations. What regulations are those? Have new ones been promulgated that I'm not aware of?
The 1.600 to 1.603 are outdated regulations, and our regulation group is aware of that and is working on updating those regulations. But the way that it stands right now is that we are endeavoring to get remote access for everyone. But the way that the system is currently set up, this is the way that we can do it. And this is the way the management decision and the procedures that VA has put in place to provide this type of access. These are procedural decisions and processes that really fall outside of or within VA's discretion to determine, because they are how we conduct and operate our internal systems and govern access to that system and protect the information within those systems. And so it really has to be seen within the technical landscape that we have right now before us. It's not necessarily how it will always be, but it is what we are working with currently.
Well, a lot of your argument seems to be based on your argument about the regulation, the 1600 portion of the regulation being outdated. You're trying to make this distinction between an automated claims record and the electronic file.
Between what?
Between the automated claims record. You're saying that referred to BDN, and, you know, BDN is no longer. Isn't that what you were saying in your pleadings?
Yeah.
And then you're saying that the electronic file or the VBMS or whatever is a newer system. But in the order that we issued, the The order, the Federal Register used the automated claims record language and then mentioned seemingly the types of things that were included in that, and it said BDN, virtual VA, and VBMS. So I don't understand why a lot of your arguments are based on the distinction between those two, and yet in the Federal Register it sounds as though VA actually considers them the same thing or all under the same umbrella.
It's foremost our position that 1.600 and 1.603 do not apply to VBMS in any way. But the Federal Register specifically, it's a notice of, this is a notice of a update to the system of records. And it is strictly a creature of the Privacy Act. It is not meant to expand the scope of regulations beyond their clear meaning. And it is not meant to... It's descriptive and not authoritative. It is not meant to create a right. It's simply to say VA has created a new system of record, and that is VBMS.
But would you agree that it seems to refer to the automated claims record, which you say in your pleadings basically meant BDN, and it equates that with VBMS. Yeah, I'm just referring to what we quoted and other portions of that same Federal Register section. That Federal Register was referring to policies and practices for accessing records in the system and safeguards that refer to granting attorneys remote online access to a claimant's automated claims records. Mm-hmm. And then it actually mentions access to BDN, virtual VA, corporate WINRS, VetsNet, and VBMS as seemingly under the umbrella of claimant's automated claims records.
This section that you're referring to, the reference to remote, simply reflects the agency's continuing trend and endeavor to provide remote access to representatives of attorneys. But again, this notice is simply to describe the systems that are being added to VA systems, computer technology systems. It is not meant to create any right. And if you read the notice as a whole, it really is clear that attorney, the reference to an attorney is an attorney before the agency. So there's nowhere in this language does it say court or appeal.
Right, yeah, that wasn't actually what I was referring to. In 1.600, you're arguing that the use of the term automated claims record does not refer to VBMS. And my only point is that this notice...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Reading it, it actually seems to be saying that a claimant's automated claims record includes VBMS. That was my only point. So the distinction you were trying to draw between what an automated claims record refers to...
Okay.
Seems weakened by this.
Well, I think I understand what you're saying, but I would like to point out that 1.600 Section B2 makes a distinction between claims record and claims file, and it specifically states that VBA will grant access to its automated claimants' claims records from locations outside the RO under the following conditions. Access will be provided, number two, is only to the claims records of VA claimants whom the organization or individual represents as reflected in the claims file. So 1.600 is simply claims records, specific claims records that are delineated here. And again, it's our position that this notice is simply a notice that we are adding a system to the system of records, and it cannot create any right. And to the extent it would be even considered to apply to VBMS, again, 1.600D2 disclaims any procedural right under that regulation.
Counsel, are you done? How are veterans given access to their electronic VA treatment records? Do you know?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Are veterans given electronic access to their treatment records?
There is a system, eBenefits, that is currently, I think it's in the running. We are in the procedure right now of allowing veterans to get access to their records. They can also go to a local regional office and access those records.
And is it a different process than looking at your VA claims file?
No.
You have to have a PIV card in order to look at your treatment records?
No.
No. Okay. Now let me ask you the same question that I ask appellant's counsel. Whose records are they?
They are in VA's custody.
I know they're in VA custody. Whose records are they?
VA's.
They're not the individual veterans' records?
No, they are VA's records. If you look at 38 U.S. Code 5701, A, it states all files, records, reports, and other papers and documents pertaining to any claim under any of the laws administered by the Secretary and the names and addresses shall be confidential and privileged, and no disclosure shall be made except under this following sections.
So there are records about me and on me and about my claim, and your position is that they're the VA's records?
They're in VA's custody, but the veteran has the medical records are the veteran's records.
All right. But not the claims file records?
No.
That may contain medical records?
Yes.
Okay. Now, going back to the other question, I'm in Juneau, Alaska, 847 miles away from my RO. I have a trusted attorney there that I have had a relationship with for 20 years, who's a member of in good standing of the Alaska Bar. I want him to take a look at my record, right? Now, what you're telling me is that he'll have to get a PIV card, which takes, in a Carpenter matter, it took over a year to receive a PIV card.
If I understand your question correctly, a representative can show that they are the duly authorized representative and that they have permission to access those records. They do not need a PIV card to go to the regional office.
So I sign a document that says this individual is a member of good standing of the Alaska Bar, and I want him or her to be able to access my records for purposes of review. That's good enough?
If you have a duly authorized document from the claimant authorizing you to see those records, and you go to the regional office, then yes, you can see the records. You do not need a PIV card.
All right. But you're saying because it's electronic, there's a different system in place, but we need to go through the PIV card process.
No, I'm saying when a representative wants to remotely access the records, not at the regional office, because at the regional office, somebody is there, and there's a control mechanism in place to ensure that the person accessing those records is only looking at the records that they're authorized to see.
All right. Now, if I authorize this attorney in Juneau, Alaska, to look at all of my records in the custody and possession of the VA, right, and I do that in writing, you're saying that he or she cannot do that electronically?
If you're asking, can the representative, are you talking about remote access?
Yeah.
I'm a little bit confused by your question. I apologize.
Well, you've got two standards, one of which is that my attorney can drive 847 miles through Canada and present the document that I have signed.
Right.
So I get to look at Lance's records. And you're telling me that the RO would say, sure, no problem. Mm-hmm. Right. But if my same attorney, who doesn't want to drive 847 miles, says, I want to look at Lance's records electronically, you're saying you can't do that.
That's correct, and there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is when you go to the regional office, there is somebody there that is ensuring, a control mechanism, that is ensuring that you're only looking at the records of the person you're authorized to see.
Well, maybe they shouldn't give other people's records to my representative. I mean, they're only going to give my records to my representative, right?
If you are remotely accessing records and you do not have a PID card or you do not have accreditation, that would be unfettered access, and that would be a violation of the privacy laws and the information security laws. There would be no control mechanism for us to know that you are only looking at the person's records that you are authorized to see.
Why can't VA assign a POA code without requiring accreditation if somebody's gone through the background check process to get a PIV card?
Well, again, you still need the PID card.
Right, right.
But beyond that, VA has made a management decision that in addition to a PID card, they will not give a PID card to somebody that is not accredited. And the reason for that is because the way that VBMS is set up is there are just technological limitations right now. And the best way that we have to guarantee that we are meeting our privacy and security obligations while also providing the remote access is to have accreditation as an additional requirement with the PID card. Part of that is because VBMS is a legacy system that was built on top of VA's corporate database that also pulls from and relies on accreditation. There are a lot of moving parts there. There's a lot of technical issues here, and that's really the reason why this is an internal management issue and a procedures issue that is best left to the agency to decide how best to provide that remote access in a way that also protects our information and the information system.
Well, it's unclear to me what value it adds when the PIV card process is so stringent and is satisfactory to allow contractors to have access to VA systems.
Well, accreditation
also
allows
employees to have access to VA systems.
Well, accreditation also is a way for us to uniformly track and monitor representatives.
That's through assignment of the POA code, though, right?
Which you can only get through accreditation.
That's the part that I don't get. If somebody sits down after you look at Mr. Stoltz's application for accreditation and decides he has met all the requirements, we can now assign him a POA code. Why can't he jump into that part of the process after satisfying the PIV code process? That's the piece I don't need. But does he have to input his accreditation number every time in addition to his POA, in addition to his PIV card, every time he wants to look at his claimant's record? Or does he only need to put in his POA code and his PIV card?
A POA code and a PIV card.
So why can't somebody interject into the system and assign a POA in the absence of accreditation? If POA is what is the limiting factor for the universe of files that an appellant's attorney or an attorney can look at.
Again, this is a decision that a VA has made that it has technological restraints, first of all, and it's also, we've historically used accreditation and the POA codes in order to monitor and track the access to the record.
Well, apparently not, because under the prior regulation, you allowed attorneys without accreditation to get access to claims information. We won't call it a claims file, just for sake of argument. And my understanding is there are still some claims, like spina bifida claims, that are processed through BDN. So that regulation would, in theory, apply and would allow an attorney representing a spina bifida claimant access to BDN without being accredited. So there were times when folks were unaccredited, were allowed to come and look at stuff through your remote access.
I'm not aware of those times. I know that that's in the regulation. I also know through the research I've done for this case is that these systems are all draw from VBA's corporate database that rely on accreditation and POA codes. So I'm not aware of that ability.
So right now, if an attorney were representing a spina bifida claimant and their stuff is in BDN, they would be denied access absent accreditation, in violation of your own regulation?
BDN is not at issue here. It's the VBMS that's at issue here.
Indulge me.
BDN was written 20 years ago, and the technology is different today. And so the regulation is not written to accommodate the law of FISMA, to accommodate the updates that it made to the Privacy Act. So it's simply an outdated regulation that would not allow us to comply with other federal laws that were mandated to follow.
And so getting back to the Federal Register notices that refer to in accordance with regulations for remote access, there are no regulations.
There is no right to remote access to VBMS, so there are no regulations.
Even though the Federal Register refers to access will be granted in accordance with regulations.
The VA regulations referred to in the System of Records Notice refer to accreditation because the Federal Register Notice as a whole speaks to representation before the agency. And again, it's simply a descriptive document that was a creature of the Privacy Act and not intended to create any rights or to provide remote access.
Well, let me ask you the same question that I asked Appellant's counsel. You seem to be suggesting to Appellant's counsel that even though she has absolutely no desire to represent veterans before the department, that she seek VA accreditation, and something about that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, this is VA's internal system, and a PIV card is essentially a VA badge. So, and these are documents and records that contain very, very confidential medical records and information.
No, I completely understand everything you just said.
With the PIV card, VA has determined that it, as a management policy decision, that accreditation is also part of the piece that is required, and VA has the discretion to determine that. Per FISMA, PIV is required, but FISMA allows an agency to determine any extra security measures that they deem necessary to protect the information and information systems.
Could you speak to my point, which is that Appellant's counsel would essentially be seeking accreditation to practice before VA and represent claimants in presenting claims and have absolutely no intention of ever doing that. And you might be, by requiring attorneys who want remote access for representation at the court, you might be requiring, let's say, a few hundred over many years. Mm-hmm. To be part of your system, mm-hmm. and essentially seek to be able to represent veterans before VA when they have absolutely no intention of doing that. As a matter of fact, they have intentions of not doing that, let's say.
Well, first, Appellant's counsel hasn't actually articulated what it is about accreditation that is so burdensome or unreasonable. The PIV card is still required. So, to get VA accreditation, that is what's required for the privilege of remote access, which is not otherwise required.
I know, but let's just clarify one thing. Accreditation is accreditation to represent before VA.
Yes.
This is not part of VA. We all know that.
Right.
So why should she, why would you even suggest that she complete a form essentially indicating her interest in representing veterans before VA when she has admitted that she has no such interest or intent?
If she wants the privilege of remote access to VA's internal system, we have required that accreditation is part of that process. And I understand that she may not want to work before the agency, but she still has the option that we have been providing for decades, as Judge Sholin said, of going to the local RO and reviewing the record there. and we provided her with the ability to get remote access, and she has declined. So I think that asking VA to retrofit its system to accommodate a handful of private representatives for more convenience is it does not warrant revision to VA's internal practices, which are purely discretionary and something that they decided as a business policy are required to protect the meet their obligations of protecting information and information systems.
Will VA be waiving the continuing legal education requirements for appellant's counsel if she were to seek accreditation but never intended to practice at VA?
I don't have the authority to ask or to answer that, but it's something I can ask about. Again, though, this process is what we currently have in place, and this is an ongoing system. We're working on SEP, Stakeholder Enterprise System, or portal, which is entering its phase two in December. So there are other things in the works to make this a better system and make it more accommodating and accessible to everyone.
Counselor, after your very eloquent explanations, I'm going back to Anchorage, Alaska, and Juneau, Alaska. I'm in Juneau, and I go down to my local Legion Hall and talk to my service officer, and I'm saying, gee, this attorney who's been an attorney forever with stellar credentials can't get VBMS access. Can you, Mr. Service Officer for the American Legion, get my remote records from Anchorage? And I believe the answer to that is yes, without going through the hoops and the hurdles and the PIV business. Is that true?
If the person that you're asking can get records does not have an authorization from the claimant, then no. But if the claimant has provided authorization, then yes.
On a bar napkin, I write, Charlie Brown is hereby authorized to access my records through VBMS, and I give that to him, and then he can get into the VBMS system to get my records from Anchorage down to Juneau, as I understand it.
I'm confused. I'm sorry. Are you speaking, you're the veteran, and you're asking if you're...
I'm the veteran. My lawyer doesn't want to go through all of this nonsense, but... The regulation excludes veteran service organizations,
okay,
which includes the American Legion.
Right.
I get my service officer to make the request through VBMS, and I can get the records, right?
Yes.
Why discriminate against attorneys?
I wouldn't frame it as discrimination. Veteran service organizations are treated differently per the regulation, and 14.629 allows for, Each employee with the Veterans Service Organization is independently accredited, but Veterans Service Organizations can use an organization code to access records because the way the regulation is set up is the VSOs are essentially self-policing. So they're able to vouch for their employee and, you know, ensure that that person is going to be looking at the records that they're authorized to look at and that sort of thing, whereas accreditation of agents and attorneys in Part B, that is where VA does the policing, essentially, of access. And
just one more question, are you familiar with the Veterans Choice Program dealing with medical care?
No.
All right. Congress has said if you're a veteran and you live outside of a 40-mile circle from a VA a medical facility, you can seek treatment in your home venue.
Okay.
Now, that's kind
in a private facility, you mean?
Pardon? What?
In a private facility?
Yes.
Okay.
So Congress says there's no need to require veterans to drive more than 40 miles to get medical care. I think the Secretary signed on to that. Now we're talking about records driving 847 miles. Don't you think eventually the scales is going to balance somewhere?
Well, I think that medical treatment for a veteran is different than accessing records. And again, there is no control mechanism for remote access to records if we do not have these safeguards in place, such as the PIV card and accreditation.
I thank you. Judge Marley?
Yeah, I do have one or two more questions. You argue in your pleadings that the remote access is within the sole discretion of VA, and yet you also kind of at the same time are arguing that you're constrained or guided by the Privacy Act and a few other laws, the acronyms of which I don't remember. So which is it? Are you acting here within your sole discretion? Are you actually acting under the requirements of Privacy Act and several other federal laws?
Well, Privacy Act and FISMA dictate essentially VA's obligation to protect information, confidential information, and information systems, the integrity of these information systems, and the laws. Those federal laws are pretty complex. I'm not an expert on them, but they set the outer bounds of what's required, and one of those outer bounds is the requirement of having a PIV card. But there is language within the within FISMA that allows for agencies to provide further security measures as they deem fit for the information security systems that those independent and individual agencies have to meet the risks that that agency is faced with. So while those federal laws present the outer bounds of within which VA has to operate, VA does have further discretion to add on to those laws and to essentially carry out the security protocols the way that they see fit for their agency.
So you're not acting within your sole discretion?
Well, beyond PIV card, that is overall mandated. But then beyond that, the specific law, OMB, does provide that it is discretionary. So I have something on this. To find it.
Well,
I don't have it on me right now, but the language of the law does provide some discretion for the individual agencies to assign information security officers and then further provide in their discretion whatever other management control protocols are needed.
Okay, and one other question, and I apologize if this is a repeat of one of the other ones, but you mentioned in your response to the appellant's motion for access that you were constantly updating your programs, your procedures, et cetera, and that you expected that you would perhaps allow unaccredited individuals to actually have remote access at a certain point? Do you know when that would be?
I'm not sure that I said that in my pleading. I don't recall where that is. But
Secretary is endeavoring to provide such access, and that currently the access is limited to only accredited attorneys. You did use that language. But do you have any idea of when that would be?
I do not. I know that the stakeholder enterprise portal is an ongoing process, an ongoing system that is constantly being developed and upgraded, and they're aware of the issues that we're facing now. They're aware of this case. They're aware of some of the requirements that we would like to see. But again, it's an ongoing process, and I know that phase two is scheduled for December to roll out, and that is supposed to include the e-folder. But I cannot say much more in terms of what access or what requirements will be needed for access to that system at this point.
Thank you. Judge Shulman?
I have two more questions. One, I'd like to follow up on Judge Lance's line of inquiry of going into the bar in Juneau. Would the VSO working in the bar in Juneau need to have a PIV card?
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. And then I'm going to ask you what I asked your opposing counsel. Who has the burden of proof here?
Burden of proof to get remote access?
No, for us to determine, whether to grant our motion or not.
Appellant has the burden of proof here.
And why do you say that?
Because there is no right to remote access, and we have allowed them, we have provided them opportunity to get remote access, and they have simply not shown reasons for why accreditation is unduly burdensome or unreasonable, or how VA has, is not in compliance with Rule 10D.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Can I conclude? Your Honors, Appellant's counsel has not shown that she does not have access to the original record or that VA is in violation of Rule 10D. To the extent the privilege of remote access to VBMS is governed by federal law and otherwise within VA's discretion, the court does not have jurisdiction to dictate the means that VA protects information in its information security systems. Thank you.
Thank you. Appellant?
Your Honors, this isn't an issue of how the Secretary administers his own benefits. This is about the court's power to determine the record of proceedings for review. VA already has a system in place to protect claimants' information for accredited representatives who wish remote access to VBMS. And here, Appellant has given written consent to Appellant's counsel to access that privileged information. It's not clear that the attorney, the word attorney in Federal Register Notice only refers to an agency, an attorney before the agency, as the Secretary asserted. First, the plain language of Sections 1.600 through 1.603 clearly provide two sets of applicants, one accredited representatives and two court attorneys. If the Secretary had wished to limit access only to accredited representatives, he could have done so, and so the second subsection of that, of 1.601, would not be necessary.
If I can interject, let's agree that there are two categories of people in 1.600, and the Secretary owes remote access. The information described in that those sequential regulations is very limited. So wouldn't their duty to provide you information be only limited to that claim data, as opposed to being able to look at medical records and other kinds of evidence that may have been in the claims folder?
Your Honor, I think that's where Rule 10D comes in. Under that rule, Appellant's counsel has the right to review any original material that's relevant to the appeal. And I also think that that's where the Federal Register Notice comes in, because since the promulgation of Section 1.600 through 603, the Secretary's automated systems have changed. And so to read it as it was stated only in 1994, but I could be wrong, that doesn't have any real meaning in today's context. And that's why the fact that the Secretary and the Federal Register Notice provided that VBMS is a part of the automated claims file and that VBMS has replaced VDN, that's why you have to read it in context and as a whole. Your Honors, because the Secretary has not explained why accreditation would add any additional security, for the reasons I stated in my opening and for the reasons in my pleadings, I would ask this Court to direct the Secretary to provide meaningful access to the claimant's remote electronic record. Thank you.
Ms. Burley, do you have anything? Thank you very much. The matter is under advisement. We'll now brief counsel.
All rise.